when you get on the bus, there's sort of a turnstile type of thing, and you need a little card, and you have to buy a card from the driver if you don't have one. And so I tried to hand him the rubles. I think it was 28 rubles, which is a little less than a dollar, and he just ignored me. And he started talking to me angrily in Russian. I didn't know what he was saying, and I was trapped because I couldn't get actually back to the rest of the bus. I was standing up there with him, and he's driving along, and then I look back, and this woman is sort of in this big coat and fur hat, starts walking towards me, calling out, "Young man, young man," and she's holding her bus pass. And I saw other women on the bus had gotten out their bus passes to get ready to hand it to me, and they rescued me. And I took it, I got on, I tried to offer her the rubles. She wouldn't take it. She just said, "Sadit, just sit." And so I sat, and you know, I had almost been in tears when I was trapped up there with that horrible driver. And it was just, there's something about, you know, your first impression of Russia, your first impression of an experience can be awful, and it can be cold, and it can be really unwelcoming. And then you find the beauty and the poetry in it. And I was just so, so touched.
Another thing I thought about was the story of how you lost your bag. I believe it was in a coffee shop or cafe. And and the fear you felt once it was discovered missing, because you got your bag back, but the audio equipment was missing.
The audio equipment was missing, and I thought that someone had just taken it or whatever. And my wife and I were in our apartment in Moscow, and this was just a few months into moving to Russia, and the phone rang, and it was a woman who said on the line to my wife that her father had found my bag and that he would meet us at the puppet theater across the street from our apartment. So we made arrangements to meet him. I went and bought chocolates and flowers, thinking that's what you do when someone does something very nice for you. Met him. I sort of asked in my very, very minimal Russian at that point, you know, "Where'd you find it?" And he said, "Oh, the street." I was like, "Okay." So I brought it back, and I was thrilled to have it. The electronic equipment was gone, but at least I had, you know, my books from Russian class. And Boris and Sergey, who are the two wonderful employees who work for NPR in Moscow, were sort of chuckling when I told them the story. And I said, what's so funny, guys? And they said, did you have a business card or something in there? How do you think they found you and knew who you were? I was like, oh. And so that was sort of my little reminder by the Russian domestic security, whatever agency it was, that you're a journalist, welcome to Russia, we can sort of look out for you. And it makes you paranoid. It makes you really paranoid sometimes. And there was one moment on the trip that I describe in the book where I was in this village in the middle of nowhere, checked into a hotel, and this friendly guy, he's a veterinarian, he's this bushy little mustache, he spoke a little bit of English, he said, "My name's Vasily, let's go to the banya, the Russian bathhouse, together tonight." And I was sort of like, oh my God, you might be part of the FSB. Why were you the only other person staying in this hotel? Why did you come out as soon as I checked in? He turned out to be the nicest guy in the world. We hung out, you know, drinking vodka, steaming in the bathhouse, eating sausage, and talking about how, you know, if the two of us had been in charge of the two countries, there never would have been a Cold War.
What also really strikes me, everybody you meet, is the enormous amount of pride they have and why they are willing to, many of the people you talk to, just the meager conditions with which they're living, the cramped quarters, and how they might have to save for many, many months or longer to take a train trip to see cousins they haven't seen in many years.
There is something about a lot of people in this country where there's this belief that if you go through hardship and live through tough times, it will make you stronger and build you up, you know, and that it's a necessary thing to go through to be strong and to find strength and to pass on that strength to your family. And that's just, it's something you hear time and time again from people of all ages in Russia. You know, there are Russians who will sort of laugh at Americans and people from the West saying, "You haven't been through, you know, rough enough times to be strong." That's why they kind of view the West as weak in many ways. And there's a real tension in Russia right now because there is that pride. And in Soviet times, for all the hardship, there was a sense of pride and patriotism, and people aren't feeling it as much anymore. There's a lack of identity that a lot of people struggle with. And that's why I think when you're in a country where people sort of struggle sometimes to understand the future and to even feel what a future might look like, that's why you see people reaching back to the last identity that they really had and felt, and that was Soviet times. And I think it's one reason you see Soviet nostalgia really growing these days.
Well, let's talk about something a little less heavy. There were many times where there was vodka involved, And
no,
were there times,
never.
Were there times where you said, I'm sure you were tempted to say, no, I can't possibly do this anymore. I'm going to have just the worst hangover tomorrow morning. But
yeah,
but you didn't
I was pretty tempted
that.
A lot of times. No, it was very difficult to do. People were very persuasive in Russia. And you're rude if you refuse. There's something about Russian culture that that does that to you. And I will say it is not a laughing matter for a lot of people because alcoholism is a terrible, terrible problem in that country. But, you know, vodka, cognac, I mean, it's everywhere you go. You sort of hope that someone's going to be offering tea, but oftentimes it's vodka or cognac. And I just got back from Crimea recently and met this former Soviet Navy sub commander, and he uttered this phrase as we were leaving, Napasashuk, which means one for the road. And I felt literally I was quivering because I knew from my days in Russia that that is something that can be so terrifying. And sure enough, you know, next thing you know, he's brought out three shots. He's clinking glasses. He's telling us, our team of Americans, that we're original Russians for doing this. And so, yeah. Yeah, vodka is a part of it happens there.
And how nice that you'd be able to go back, I mean, with doing the book and returning to see the people that stand up for me are the babushkas, these elderly women that love Beatles songs.
Yeah, the Baranova babushkas, they're really inspiring. Many of them have lost their husbands to disease, alcoholism. You know, the life expectancy in Russia for men is barely over 60 years. And so you have a lot of women who sort of live the later years by themselves. These women in the small village, they came together, you know, for companionship, and they just wanted to sing. And they started singing songs and did these Beatles covers. And they went viral on YouTube. These just adorable, inspiring women. And they ended up becoming so big, they represented Russia at the Eurovision International Singing Contest. And I got to tell you, you watch a video of that, and I dare you not to feel chills.
Are you in touch with many of these people, or are you able to communicate with them? I mean, I don't suppose many of them have easy access to email.
Not nearly as many as I'd like. And I got to tell you, I've been working on this book now. And, you know, Sergei is someone I'm closely in touch with. I just saw him when I went back to Moscow a few weeks ago. And Boris, I'm in touch with. So the people I was closest to, I'm very much in touch with. But some of the characters and people I met out in the country, you know, now that the book is done and I've sort of done it and thought a lot about it, it's one thing I really want to do soon is sort of reach out to as many people as I can, let them know about the book, see what they think of it, and see what's going on in their lives today.
Do you get a unique perspective? As some say, we could be on the cusp of another Cold War, and you're reporting this week on Crimea. Think about what some of these people could be going through because, I mean, you spent so much time there.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to say I have a unique perspective. There are a lot of people who know much, much, much more about Russia than I do. But it was interesting for me to go to Crimea. And I don't know. I think there is this sense among some Americans, and I think it comes across in some of the reporting, that, you know, this is this crime that has happened. And the West believes that Russia should not have taken Crimea. I mean, they did it illegally, and there's obviously an argument for that. But what is lost in some of the reporting is the depth with which many people in Crimea sort of feel a loyalty and a closeness to Russia. There are a lot of people in Crimea who feel that this is a very dangerous world, that Ukraine failed them, that the government in Ukraine has been corrupt for too long, there's been so much instability, too many revolutions, and they feel just a sense of stability and safety with Moscow. And I think that's an important voice to listen to. There are a lot of really terrifying things going on in Crimea right now. The Crimean Tatars, this ethnic minority, you know, brutalized by Stalin and coming under pressure now by a modern Russian leader, Vladimir Putin. But part of the story that's not always told is sort of this love with Russia and this feeling of, in this crazy world, you know, I feel safer in Moscow's embrace.
Hockey with cheerleaders. and I liked your comparison to the Hunger Games. And I guess that is kind of appropriate given where you are.
Yeah. Wasn't that weird? I'm a Pittsburgh Penguins fan. I've never seen a cheerleader or a scene like that at a Penguins game in my life. It was very strange. And, you know, the way that each sort of team has this connection to some sort of Russian industry. And this was Yaroslavl Lokomotiv, locomotive, which is the train. And this was the city that actually lost its entire hockey team in 2011 in a plane crash. It was awful. And so I went to kind of see how the city was recovering, how their hockey fans were recovering. And yeah, it was so weird. I mean, they had cheerleaders and dancers dressed up in this railroad theme. It felt very Hunger Games and really weird. And that city has been through so much. But it was one of the places where you would hear people talk about, yes, that was a tragedy, and it was a tragedy that made us stronger. And that's a message you would hear time and time again in that country.